Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Here's your scoop for the week of August 12th to the 16th. Revelstoke's 4th Street Bridge was shut down to traffic after a city-owned vacuum truck hit a crossbeam. That sucks. Stoke FM's Melissa Jameson is on the scoop. And Teeling It artist Dempsey Bob celebrates salmon and the historical North Pacific cannery in his latest exhibition. Dan Messick from CICK News has that scoop. And please keep the Top Gun references to Iceman to yourself. Nanaimo journalist Lauren McKenzie is speaking to participants in the Indigenous Lift Collective about a really cool pilot project. That's this week on The Scoop.
This is a CHY News update to inspire Indigenous youth and young adults with the world of aviation and aerospace. The Nanaimo Airport YCD hosted an event to highlight the wonders and opportunities in the industry. In cooperation with Indigenous Lift Collective, Alcan Air, Elevate Aviation Learning Center, Gulf Island Seaplanes, and Alley Bird Aero, the Nanaimo Airport hosted the Give Them Wings event to introduce Indigenous youth and young adults to aviation and aerospace-related careers. CHY attended the event on August 13th, with about 30 participants, with the live backdrop of the hustle and bustle of the airport. Keith Garen-Boyce is a Chief Financial Officer and VP of Business Development for CYD. He says this event came together as Indigenous outreach is very important. They want to provide opportunities for Indigenous youth to get exposure to aviation and see the opportunities for careers.
It's important to run an event. There is such a need and a demand for people in the aviation sector. And a big one is there seems to be a lot of people that just don't recognize aviation as being a really good career. And there's a lot of good business type of jobs, but also trades. And right now it just seems like people aren't pushing trades as much.
He says right now aircraft maintenance engineers are one of the most in-demand jobs in aviation.
That's a big one. So there was a pilot shortage that seems to be working its way through, but the people that actually maintain the aircrafts, if there's not enough people to maintain the aircrafts, the planes aren't even getting up in the sky, there is no need for the pilots. So aircraft maintenance engineers is a great job, well-paying job. There's a big shortage of workers right now, and it's a great career to get into.
He says that youth interested in aviation should speak with their career guidance counselors in school, as there are many different career opportunities and many different education journeys to take. Participants of the event got behind-the-scenes look at the airport with tours of the grounds and equipment. They also got to meet with industry professionals, tried their hand at flying a plane with a flight simulator, and learned about aviation careers and opportunities with Give Them Wing partners. Dina Jimenez is an air traffic controller and the director of community engagement and Indigenous partnerships for Elevate Aviation. She says Elevate Aviation is a not-for-profit meant to encourage more women and underrepresented groups to pursue aviation as a career. She says they give a platform for women and underrepresented groups to thrive and succeed through mentorship, bursaries, and skill training. She says the largest barrier for women and underrepresented groups working in aviation is simply the lack of awareness of the opportunities.
And traditionally, careers in aviation were something men would do. And it's just a very specific group of men. So, like most of us, we tend to do what we know, like maybe what our dad does or what our mom does, and go into a more typical traditional role. So by bringing out all these women with careers in aviation to talk to other women, makes them aware that these jobs exist and they can do them. And we tell our stories and how we got into them, and makes it more reachable. But the awareness is huge. And then the mentorship following the awareness is also huge. Help them get to where they need to be.
Jamez says that growing up, her dad loved aviation and would take her flying. But it wasn't until she was 26 years old that she became interested in flying.
And I was not happy with my job, with my life. And it was a good time for me to start over. And my mom asked me, okay, this is your opportunity. What have you always wanted to do? I said, fly an airplane. And that just came out of nowhere for me and for her. We both went, what? And I went, yeah, I really want to fly an airplane. I want to be a pilot.
She says it was during her flight training that she learned about air traffic control.
And at the same, so while I was doing my flight training, and this happens to everybody that learns how to fly, you talk to an air traffic controller in the tower and it's very intimidating. It's really scary. So I asked them, may I come up and visit the tower? If I could see their faces, maybe I won't be so scared to talk to them and so scared of making a mistake. That's what it is. And I went up there and looked around and went, what? What is this? How come I didn't know about it? And so I applied to become an air traffic controller and I made it.
She says there's many jobs in aviation, but many people don't know they exist.
And there's so many careers around aviation, if you think about it. Someone's got to design an airplane, build the airplane, paint the airplane, fly the airplane, ensure safety on the airplane, fuel the airplane, park the airplane, build the airport, clean the airport, run the airport, be in the tower. And there's so much. Someone has to do all the data planning for the airlines, for their customers, for their services, for their routing. Nav Canada, there's human resources, there's lawyers, there's airspace planners. There's such a huge variety of jobs in aviation that people just don't know about. And that's our mission, to get that information out there and to help people get in there.
She says 19% of North American air traffic controllers are women. Only 9 to 11% of commercial pilots are female, and less than 3% of air traffic maintenance engineers are women. She says these type of events are important to introduce the next generation who may have never thought about a career in aviation.
Well, I honestly believe even if you did change one person's life and they became someone in aviation, there's now a role model in that community and someone people can look at and say, she's a pilot. She's an aircraft maintenance engineer. And people are like, I didn't even know that existed. Oh, and it's a woman. Like, just to have that one role model, it's going to snowball.
Stuart Myers is an Indigenous advanced care paramedic with BC Emergency Health Services and works as an advanced care flight paramedic based out in Nanaimo. He does medical transportation across the province. He says at 19 years old, he got into the career because of his passion for helping people.
I got my pilot's license when I started flying when I was 15 years old. I got my pilot's license when I was 16. I started off into going down the pathway of commercial aviation and realized I had more of a passion to go into the emergency medical services. I still have a pilot's license. I'm not current, but I'm fortunate enough now I get to fly. I get the opportunity to fly not only in the fixed wings, but I get opportunities to work with critical care teams and fly in the helicopters as well.
He says events like Give Them Wings are important to inspire the next generation of Indigenous youth to work in aviation.
There's so much to do. There's so much to see. The province is beautiful. The lands that we fly over, the places we go, it's really a wonderful profession. I'm blessed and thankful that I have that opportunity.
Benjamin Heald is one of the participants in the event. At 20 years old, Heald already had an interest in aviation, so when he heard of the event, he thought it was right up his alley. He says the day was filled with a lot of learning opportunities, and he got to try his hands at flying over the Comox Valley region in a flight simulator.
And then we just spent some time in a flight simulator, and that was outstanding. I got my hands on the controls for a little bit, right, which is, it was really cool. Very touchy controls, but the gentleman who built the simulator was there, and, you know, he was outstanding. You could tell that he had a genuine passion for it, and he gave us the ins and outs.
Heald says he always thought about joining the military, but also has an interest in physical science. He says the sense of adventure flying with the Air Force has a big appeal on him.
I mean, everyone wants to be a pilot. You know, everyone wants to be Tom Cruise, Top Gun, you know. If I can make it, I'd love to, but if not, I just want to be a part of it, you know.
He says the biggest takeaway from the event is that the world of aviation is vast.
And there's a lot to know, a lot of complexities. It has kind of struck me that all my first step needs to just be getting out there and figuring everything out, like figuring what I want to do out and just meeting people. There's been a lot of great people today who've come to me and told me what they would do in my situation. Say, hey, you're young. I would do this. I would do that. There's so many opportunities for you. I'm kind of realizing how many opportunities there are for me.
For now, Heald says he's looking at ways he can get involved with the aviation scene around Vancouver Island while he looks into education for down the line. Hopefully one day he will fulfill his dreams and finally take flight. For CHOI News, this is Lauren McKenzie.
Today on CCK News, Dempsey Bob, the world-renowned and celebrated Tahltan Tlingit artist, is opening a new exhibit at the North Pacific Cannery. On Friday, Bob was joined by dozens as he opened his show, Salmon Cannery Days, that reconnects with his roots and celebrates salmon and honors the last of the North Pacific canneries that supported thousands of people on the coast decades ago. I caught up with Heather Hadland-Dudeward, General Manager of the North Pacific Cannery, and Dempsey Bob about hosting the new exhibit.
Heather Hadland-Dudeward, I'm the General Manager here at North Pacific Cannery National Historic Site.
Great, Heather. Thanks so much for being with us on CICK. So we're here today. There is an exhibit opening, a Dempsey Bob exhibit. Maybe tell me a little bit about what the exhibit is about and why are you having it here at the cannery?
So Dempsey Bob approached us probably about 2-3 years ago wanting to do this exhibit. It's called Cannery Days. And North Pacific Cannery holds a very special place in Dempsey's heart because he grew up in Port Edward. And from that generation of people working in the canneries, everybody kind of visited every cannery. North Pacific Cannery is special to him because it's the last remaining intact cannery on the north, or on the Pacific North Coast. And so it is kind of like a homecoming for him, his family, his friends, and a lot of people in the Prince Rupert, Port Edward area, and all the way up the line as well. People would arrive on the train and come here. And that's one of the heart of his exhibit here is the suitcase that represents people traveling, getting off the train and coming to the canneries for the summer. So when you were young, this place was like full of adventures and family and friends. So that's one of the main reasons why he's come back here, because this is a life that is kind of over now. And he does have a golden salmon to represent the gold rush, he calls it, of the salmon gold rush of fishing, which we don't have anymore, which is really unfortunate. So, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. One thing you kind of mentioned, you know, he grew up around this area. I'm sure that'll come out in the exhibit and some of his work. But what are you hearing from people? Like, this obviously has got to be a draw. Dempsey Bob is a well-known, one of the most well-known North Pacific artists that we have. So what are you kind of seeing? What are you expecting to see people coming in to visit not only the cannery, but also his exhibit?
I think we're going to see a lot of his old friends. We've even got a Tahltan singer coming. He's going to be doing some music on the dock, which is going to be really exciting because he gave us a little bit of a kind of like a show just to test his equipment. It sounds just amazing, just on the river. But I think we're going to see a lot of people reminiscing about their time and their life here at North Pacific, because we still get lots of people returning that lived here. And I can only imagine what it was like. I can't even imagine. This place is only half of what it used to be. So for these people experiencing the memories, it's going to be really nice.
Yeah. For people who are interested in wanting to check out this exhibit, it's on for the next month, I believe. What can they expect and how can they come see it? Where is it exactly on the grounds here?
So it's actually, to my surprise, it's a little bit more spread out than we thought. We thought it would just be in the assistant manager's house because a lot of his work is wood carving. But to our surprise, it was actually metal steel that he's made these salmon carvings. So we have them all over the site so people can kind of walk around the site and enjoy. The Cannery Days display that represents all the ethnicities that came to work at the canneries, that one's in the assistant manager house, and the rest are sporadically put through the cannery, the main cannery, and one of the First Nations houses that are here on site. So when people come, they can come and pay their admission, and they will be. We'll point out where the site, where his works of art are. We'll have some T-shirts, some prints, some stickers, and whatnot for people who want to purchase them. But we'll have his art here till actually the end of the season. So September 30th is our last day of operations. So they'll be right here till then. So people have the whole rest of the summer and September to see it. So.
Yeah, last time we talked, you mentioned something about that. There's a special salmon design that's going to be on some of the t-shirts and that and stickers for the cannery. Is that right?
That's what we were hoping, but he went for a more different design. So, but we do have the red salmon in our window that he made specifically for North Pacific Cannery. It's one of a very original piece that he's made. So, and it's pretty special to us because our logo is a red salmon. He's got a lot of his original artwork here, and you only be able to get that stuff here at North Pacific Cannery. So, pretty exciting.
No doubt. Thanks so much, Heather.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for coming out.
My name is Dempsey Bob. I'm Talton Clinkett from Telegraph Creek, British Columbia, and I'm from the Wolf Clan. That's my crest.
Great, Dempsey. You just opened an exhibition here at the North Pacific Cannery, which I understand has some significance for you and your upbringing. Tell me a little bit about why you wanted to open this exhibition here.
Well, I wanted to open it here because it's... I grew up in the cannery, not here, but in Port Edward, you know, the Nelson Brothers Cannery.
Yeah.
And I wanted to honor the, you know, the people that were cannery workers and the fishermen. And, you know, like my dad worked in the cannery, and my mom worked in the cannery, my grandfather, my aunties, my uncles, my sisters, my brothers, I worked there. Oh, wow. You know, so the cannery has been a part of us for over 120 years. Our people, First Nations, worked in the cannery. You know, like, and how I got the idea was, I remember our people used to get off the train, you know, with their old suitcases, and they'd go to work in the cannery. And we could go in here and take a look.
Dempsey Bob takes me into the assistant manager's house at the North Pacific Cannery, where one of his installations is being housed.
I'm getting contemporary.
Absolutely.
Contemporary, boy.
Wow. Good to see you. See you, yeah.
I've just seen Margaret and him.
You seen her?
Yeah, we had a cup of tea with her. Yeah.
Okay.
Very nice.
How I got the idea was, the, you know, the people used to get off the train with their old suitcase. And what I did was, this suitcase is my father-in-law's from the, you know, from the 40s and 50s, you know. And what I did was I kept the old suitcase and I painted a traditional salmon design on it. Because I remember we used to get off the train from Hazleton and Smithers, Prince George, and the Nass, and they get off at the canneries at Sunnyside. They get off here in North Pacific and Cass Yar and Sunnyside and Nelson Brothers in Port Edward. And I used to remember them. They'd get on the train again with their old suitcases and go back home. And what I did was, you know, like when I was doing this, one of our elders said, you know, she worked in a cannery all her life, and she said, well, you got to include the Japanese and the Chinese people and all the people, you know, that worked in the cannery. So what I did was I got that Japanese doll from Japan. It was a gift, and the Japanese rice bowl and chopstick was given to me by a friend of mine, Azumi, and that was from Sunnyside Cannery. And what I did with this wok represents the Chinese people that worked in the cannery. That's Chinese chopsticks. And I did our traditional, very traditional spoon that we all had and used. That represents the First Nations. And the netting needles represent the net menders. The basket represents the female weavers of our people. And I just showed some of the old cans and labels that were on there. And the boots belonged to my mother-in-law. She was from England. And she those are her cannery boots. And then when you go on the other side, what I did was this side here with the apron and the uniform is my sister's, worked in the cannery over 40 years. Those are cannery gloves. And then Can Fisco was one in Rupert. Paramount was the brand for Port Edward for the Nelson Brothers Fisheries, and that's where I grew up. And that's the Port Edward flag. Each cannery had a flag, because the flags, you know, if you fish for Port Edward, you had a flag like that on your boat. And the packers would go out and use their binoculars and find you, and say you, all the fishermen coming in, they'd go and pack it all up and bring it in bigger, like a seiner. And that's why that flag was important. And what I did on this side was I did a face that represents our people. And I wanted to face the ocean. The red are the salmon eggs. And what I did, these are just stickers and stuff that were part of the cannery. And what I did was I did it in a circle, because the circle is spiritual to our people, but I don't want to say too much about it. But what I did was I did the four sacred directions, north, south, west, east. But actually north is that way. But I did it this way because you won't be able to see the suitcase if we twist it. It's not big enough. And when I had the idea, I wanted people to walk around it, you know. And so this really important part of our heritage is part of my heritage. And to me, it's real. And why I did them in red? Red is our spiritual color, you know, and it's for protection. Eh? And also the red, we say, is our land. The red is our culture. The red is our people. I mean, the circle. And the circle is our drum, you know. And that's why I did it this piece this way. And it's one of my, I think it's one of my best pieces.
Well, you were...
It's contemporary. It's an insulation piece.
Yeah.
And somebody said, but it's an insulation piece. Well, I said, well, what else could it be, right?
Yeah.
And what I did was I did three different salmon designs.
Yeah.
See it?
Yeah.
And then I broke it up like this. Look, see this fish? His back. Yeah. And then this side, when you go to this next one, these guys are like they're spawning or cuddling him, right? Yeah. And then this guy, his back's... And I got the idea at 4 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, and because I had them all in a row like this, and it didn't look right. It's just too much repetition. And then I got the idea of this. It just came to me, and I thought, oh, shit, that's what it is. I switched them. I started switching them. And that's what I did with this piece.
Amazing. I guess that's how it happens, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, one you mentioned, it's, you know, contemporary installation. It's a bit of a departure from what most people would associate with you, carvings, drawings. Is this something that you've been wanting to do and pull this together for a long time, knowing that the history is so deep with this and with this place and your family?
Oh, yeah, you know, because people want to keep us in categories, you know. Mm. They want me to make those big, expensive carvings. But yeah. I'm an artist. You can't tell an artist what to do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be a carpenter.
Be a little boring.
And you know what's really good about getting old? You just don't give a shit anymore.
I'm waiting to get there. I'm waiting to get there.
Yeah. I'm going to do what I want to do, right? That's what I'm doing. So that's what I'm doing. Because you know why? It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. And it's my time now, too. And how I got the other ideas, you know, for these. Like, these are metal cutouts. And it's that powder coating. You know, we paint cars. That's what this is. Yeah.
Lovely, Dempsey. Lovely.
Pretty neat, eh?
Yeah.
One thing that was mentioned was that you know, you grew up around here, Port Ed. Your family is so deeply connected to this. I mean, this whole area. You know, there was half a dozen canneries here up at Port Essington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the history is so deep in this place. You know, you can kind of feel the energy just being here. One thing that was mentioned was that this is a bit of a homecoming for you. I think I met your sister,
who's
also here,
and
it seems like there's a lot of friends and family that have come out. How does it feel to come back to this place, and what are you kind of feeling in terms of, you know, the energy and the history, knowing that you kind of brought it all together in this piece?
Well, I feel, you know, like I like coming here because it brings me back to my childhood, and it was a great old days, you know. It was creative, you know what I mean? It was a creative time. And at that time, our culture was very strong, and we shared and helped everything, and we worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we worked hard. And everybody that worked in the cannery, our people, they said, you know what, it was the best times of their lives. And that's how I feel, too. Okay. You know, because, you know, it's never going to happen again. And we had a lot of elders, and our elders came from the last century, so they had a lot of knowledge, you know what I mean? And the culture was strong, and I was lucky, really I was lucky that I listened, and I wish I listened more though, but... But that's why, I want to make a statement about the salmon, because we're losing the salmon, because the salmon is our culture, it's our foundation, you know. Salmon was what gave us time to carve and do our culture and live, you know. We could put up enough salmon in a month to last a year or more, you know what I mean? So that's why I wanted to make a statement, and what I'm doing with the other, like that eagle, the blue eagle, the eagle depends on the salmon. I did some 15 other wood carvings, but those are in Vancouver. I'm going to do a show at the Equinox Gallery. We can't display it here. It's too damp, and plus, it's just not much security. But
just the last thing for you, Dempsey, because you mentioned there, what does salmon mean to you?
Well, it's like I said, it's the foundation of our culture. Because, you know, the salmon is what gave us time and food. And it's spiritual to us, too, you know, because when you think about it, look, if we lose the salmon, eagles are gone, ravens are gone, killer whales are gone, animals are gone, and we're next. Really, that's the whole reality of it. And to us, you know, like how important the buffalo was to the plains people, this is our buffalo. So that's why it's important, and that's why I want to make a statement about, you know, losing them, you know. So that's why I did. That's what I'm doing anyways.
All right, Dempsey, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.
The city of Revelstoke has begun repairs to the 4th Street Bridge, made necessary after a city-owned vac truck hit the crossbeams on the bridge. The incident, which took place August 1st, saw the bridge closed to both traffic and pedestrians for nearly 2 hours. The bridge is the only access to and from Queen Victoria Hospital. During the closure, city staff coordinated with BC Ambulance, the RCMP, the Revelstoke Fire Department, and the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure, and had emergency services vehicles on either side of the bridge. In a statement released to media, the city said there were no serious injuries and no members of the public or their vehicles were damaged by the incident. City Communication Coordinator Francesca Williams told Stoke FM a structural assessment of the bridge was completed by Watson Engineering. The assessment found significant damage to the portal frame and sway bracing at 4 sections on the south end of the bridge structure. It was determined the damaged portal frame and damaged sway bracing are in need of repair. Work on the bridge got underway this past Thursday, and the city says an investigation of the damage and design of suitable repairs is ongoing. The city currently budgets roughly $15,000 a year for repairs to the bridge, which was built in the mid-1960s. The annual maintenance budget does not typically include allowances for significant repairs, such as those caused by the truck hitting the crossbeams. The incident highlights the need for a second crossing to the south side of the Illecillewaet River, where Queen Victoria Hospital, as well as Revelstoke Mountain Resort, other facilities, and numerous residences are located. A second crossing is identified in the city's Transportation Master Plan, which council recently adopted. The cost for a second crossing is estimated at $10 million. For 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Melissa Jameson.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.